Hello and welcome to CICK News. CICK News is your local and regional news coverage provided by me, Pamela Hassan, and Dan Messick for Smithers Community Radio. This news program is funded by the Community Radio Fund of Canada and the Government of Canada, and our aim is to provide local coverage on stories that affect the lives of Northerners like you. Laura Pitchinen is a comedian from Toronto who is traveling across the West to bring her autobiographical one-woman show, Lesbionist, to audiences across Alberta and BC. Lesbionist is her retelling of her coming out story, as well as her experience as a gay woman through a comical lens. I spoke to Laura about the impact of queer representation to smaller and more remote towns in the country and her thoughts on speaking to the many generations of small towners on the LGBTQ spectrum. Laura will be performing her show at Smithers Brewing Company on Wednesday, August 28th.
Hello, I'm Laura Pitchinen and the writer creator of Lesbionist.
If I were to look up multi-hyphenate in the dictionary, I'd see a picture of you hanging from a bundle of balloons. You were a Tokyo Disney dancer, actor, singer, now a teacher in Toronto with a BA in history and psychology, and a comedian. Did I leave anything out? Are you also a cobbler?
I'm thinking about it. I got a boot right now that I'm like, how could I fix this? Yeah, it's. I think just I have so many interests, and then I have to go for them. And also, like, the life of an artist kind of evolves in that way. I'm also becoming a lighting designer and graphic designer as well, which is not by choice, but
out of necessity, like, for your show, though.
Exactly. And you gather all these loves and passions, and then the career just, like, evolves on its own. But some of those things were on purpose. My degree in history and psychology were just loves of those topics and the education and thinking about the world and how can I use that to present art to the world. So it does all connect, even though it seems quite random.
Yeah, actually, I was going to ask about how your psychology degree, are you using that when you do this very vulnerable public speaking? Does your degree in psychology inform any way in how you unravel a story or how much of you that you really can share?
Yes, it informs my own development as I'm an avid journaler, and I can look back on my own writings and the way that I felt about things and then learn how to communicate those in a way that's helpful for other people, in a way that kind of suggests we're all going through this together and in similar ways, whether it's being gay or any other things you have in your life that you're struggling with. There's a process and a pattern to it. And more often I find that the work in psychology that I've done has given me this, and also being a teacher with the TDSB, high school teacher, has given me a way to relate to an audience that makes it so I'm not yelling at them. I'm not making them feel bad. I'm giving them a little nudge in the ribs to the straights to say, hey, think about this thing that you said, and so that they catch themselves and they can laugh at themselves and then say, oh, okay, maybe I won't do that next time. I see why that wasn't the best thing to do, even though my intentions were good and lovely. I think just one of the things about it being accessible and approachable and funny versus ranting. Of course, there's a room for the rant. You got to let that out somehow as well. But I think I've nestled into my place of being like a very nice liaison between the queer community and the rest.
I want to talk a little more about Lesbionist. Your tagline is, it's a hilarious autobiography from some gay girl in Toronto. So yeah. Not to be undersold, could you tell me a little bit about the show?
Yeah, I wanted it to sound just like the every gal. Come on, I got something funny to tell. You'll relate. The show, as I alluded to, started off as a series of journal entries. Not that the show was journal entries, but because I'm an avid journaler, I had kept all this information. Every single person I came out to had some sort of wild reaction in all different directions. So as you can see in the little clip, my family was ridiculous. One at a time, I told my brother in an enough joke. That went so well. My best friend, I came out to her and she said immediately, can I marry you? And I thought she was coming on to me. I thought she was saying that she'd been in love with me our whole lives. And she's been waiting for me to come out. And she, and I got myself all worked up. And then she looked at me, she said, can I officiate your wedding? Yeah. And I was like, oh my God, Yes, you could do that. Oh my God. I was going to marry her. I was going to marry her to just save face. And so even though her reaction was totally positive, it was just like adding to this list of everyone's so ridiculous. And then as the years went by, I started noticing this transition into everyone's gay and get over it. And so I had a girlfriend recently who was 34 before she came out for the first time. And she had held that secret in for many decades. And when she finally came out, everyone was like, yeah, all right.
Now I'm speaking to you. You're in Edmonton, but I wonder, are you, so you're touring the show, but are you traveling to many small or remote towns in either Alberta or BC?
In BC with Lesbianist, I'll be doing Smithers, Prince George, and then Gabriola Island this year. I did find a little bit of resistance in Edmonton last year, of all places, even though it's a big fringe city. When I did a tour just earlier this year in BC, some more remote places, remote Windermere and Vermeer, Cranbrook, the ads that I put out had a lot of colorful language for me and unwelcoming words. However, the audiences themselves, the people who do show up, are fantastic. I love them. However, it does remind me, oh, there's room for this. There's room for this show still. I have had critiques from the other side saying, oh, this has been done. We know what gay people are like. Yeah, it was hard. Oh, coming out was difficult for you. Oh, okay. But then every once in a while, I get reminded, oh, we're all on a spectrum, and my job is to bring a couple more people over to the good side.
Yeah, absolutely. And I ask about bringing it to remote or rural, smaller towns because queers in small towns do not have access to the same scene or culture that's being built by many hands. A lot of small town queers really feel like they have to do a lot of the work
You're so
themselves
right.
and are often surrounding themselves with allies, but not necessarily like a lot or a big scene of more queer people. And so I wanted to know why. It matters to, in your opinion, why it matters to bring this show to smaller and remote towns.
Yeah, that's such a lovely point. It brings community together, people that you didn't know, because I'll do my marketing, my advertising. It brings people from all around that if you weren't already immediate friends with them, I offer just a space for that. I also maybe to the same point, offer a space for those queer people to bring their straight family members and friends so that they can point out without having to say it themselves, like, here are the things that I've gone through. Could you le lend your perspective to that? And it is, I leave room after every show to have a little chit chat with everyone because I find that people come up to me anyway. So I'd like to welcome it. And it's actually my favorite part of the show. Show to get to speak with everyone and their experiences and what they resonated most with me in my show and what went the exact opposite for them. It offers just like this really beautiful conversation. They just walk up to me and we chit chat for a little bit. We're doing a little community hike to Crater Lake on the 29th at 10 a.m. Same thing, just to get the community to come out together and just hang out. We're going to meet at the green tea, the bottom of the green tea at 10 a.m. and just go on a 4-hour little jaunt with everyone and have some lunch at the lake. Everyone's welcome to come, anyone who's seen the show or not. Just again, another community moment to gather everyone and let off some steam and be with your people.
Yeah, very cool. I just had one last question, Laura, and it's who do you like to see sitting in the front row of your shows?
Oh my gosh, the young queer of today. I love. I part of the show is about the history and the legacy, my role in it, but the next generation's role in it as well. I want them to see that they matter, that their contributions, their experiences, their lives, their feelings on these things, on themselves, they matter and they contribute to this long legacy of amazing queer people. And I also want them to appreciate the way that I've come to appreciate all the people who came before me and suffered for it and for our freedom and our love. And there's something very beautiful to that. And so seeing the young queers in the audience, seeing how all they are, I have jokes in this show about how the younger generation is all non-binary and they know each themselves so well and they take on these labels, especially lesbian. That word, woof, that's a heavy word for my generation. Not Gen Z, not these new kids coming up there. Not all of them, of course. I don't want to paint too broad a brush, but to have young people coming out saying, I'm a lesbian, to go, wow, that you're taking on that word and you're giving power to it instead of this undertone of male gaze, sexuality. There's something that's been ruined with that word that a new generation is taken back with
Yeah.
pride, and it's beautiful.
Laura, best of luck on your show here in Smithers and the rest of your tour. And thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me.
Thank you so much.
Minister of Health in BC, Adrian Dix, was in Smithers on Tuesday, August 20th, to announce a joint venture between the province, Northern Health, the town of Smithers, and Providence Living to bring 160 new publicly funded beds to the Bulkley Valley. This long-term housing facility will be located at the end of Broadway Street in Smithers, and construction will begin in 2028 with completion in 2030. This announcement came as very good news to the seniors of Smithers, where there is currently a 4-year waiting list for just one of the 56 beds currently in Smithers for long-term care. Minister Dix spoke about the impact this facility will make to the residents of BC's North on Tuesday, where he spoke to a small crowd in the parking lot of the Bulkley Lodge.
Seniors care is fundamentally important to me, to Premier Eby, to the government, and I think to British Columbia. One of the things that I believe coming out of the pandemic, and I believe going into the pandemic, is that we had to improve the quality and the amount of long-term care in BC. We have more people in BC, and we have an aging population, but that the quality of that care had to improve. In British Columbia, when I became Minister of Health, 86% of people in long-term care, of long-term care homes, were under the provincial standard for staffing, 86%. And that standard had been set and was intended to be met in 2008. And now, every care home, every single care home in the province meets that standard. It doesn't mean it's easy, but everyone does it.
Minister Dix made comparisons to the previous Conservative government's budgetary expenditures when it came to health and long-term care, and how 10 years later, the response from the NDP government has been to pledge more affordable housing to BC's vulnerable and aging population.
The 10 years before I became Minister of Health, the 10 years, there had been $17 million spent in health authority capital expenditure on long-term care. To be fair, it was 17.8 million, so you could round it up to 18 if you're being fair, right? But we are spending, in this coming 10 years, 3.1 billion. That's not 180 to nothing, it's 180 to one. But what it showed is that a generational hole in the expenditure on long-term care and building the long-term care we needed. Here in Smithers, of course, there is a profound need for long-term care. You see it in people's homes and the wait times they have to get into long-term care. You see it at the hospital, where people who should be in long-term care are in hospital beds. And today I'm excited to share the news that seniors living in northern BC will have greater access to care closer to home as we prepare to build a new long-term care home in Smithers. The new home in Smithers, which will be located at the south end of Broadway Avenue, we'll add 60 net new long-term care beds to Smithers and replace 56 beds from Bulkley Valley Lodge right here behind me for a total of 216 beds. The project's business plan is now approved. We are proceeding. We expect the construction, and this will begin in 2028, with the facility expected to open for residents in 2030.
The style of housing that will be built in Smithers will be organized as households, accommodating 12 to 13 residents, compared to the 40 or 50 units per household that has been more typical across the province.
The center has the added benefit of social and recreational spaces typical of a home, such as living rooms, dining rooms, activity areas, and access to outdoor spaces where seniors will be able to remain active and build relationships that directly and positively impact their quality of life. There will be other amenities, including art and activity rooms, a hair salon, a sacred space, and many quiet rooms where families can spend time together. This is a community within a community where seniors' well-being and happiness comes first.
This new facility will also offer an adult day program, 32 spaces, which will support older adults living independently at home by providing a social connection, exercise, and health checks for seniors, allowing them to maintain their homes longer while receiving extra support. Again, this new building will increase long-term care and beds. Again, this new building will increase the number of beds in Smithers from 56 to 216.
Today, there are 1,176 long-term care beds in the entire Northern Health Authority. Prince Rupert, Haida Gwaii, to Fort St. John, and up from Quesnel, north. 1,176. We are adding, with this, the other projects announced, the other projects we're delivering is the 200 beds in Prince George, so more than 200 beds we're announcing today in Quesnel, beds in Fort St. James, dementia beds in Kitimat, beds in other communities. We are adding 689 beds in the north, reflecting the aging population of the region. This is only possible in a public health care system. It is only possible in a public health care system. This is a 58% increase in beds in this plan that Northern Health is engaging with. While we build a new hospital in Terrace, you know, you're helping pay for it. In Fort St. James, new hospital in Fort St. James, new tower in Prince George, new hospital in Dawson Creek, new ICU and ER in Quesnel. This is a breathtaking, historic investment in healthcare in the North, and the North deserves it. Too many of these projects have been waiting too long, and we are proceeding on all of them.
MLA Nathan Cullen spoke about the investment that the NDP government has made toward access to health care services and long-term care in the North.
This is a very large financial commitment from all of us as a province towards this community. And we know as Northerners, we're proud. We're also a little humble sometimes, and we are proud to contribute to the province. We're proud to pay our taxes and put forward and make sure BC is a strong place to live. It's also nice when services come back, when investments come back to our communities, so that these are the livable places that we all dream of. I am appreciative that we are going to have the time to design this facility together.
Next, Scott McCartan, representing Providence Healthcare, a faith-based nonprofit healthcare organization established by Providence Healthcare in 2017, highlighted the collaborative efforts between Providence Healthcare and Northern Health to establish and improve healthcare facilities in the North. The big ticket item was the cost advantage of this partnership, which was that there will be no regional hospital district contribution required for this long-term care facility, freeing up funds for other healthcare infrastructure projects.
It's very exciting. When they move into this new building, the 216 residents in Smithers will encounter a true home. Picturesque household layout that mirrors a traditional home, with a kitchen for in-home meal preparation, small intimate dining and living areas, shared by just 12 residents, and really inviting indoor and outdoor community spaces. The new model of care is somewhat enabled by the physical infrastructure, but it's more so delivered through new staffing models, innovative technology, and really a cultural shift in the way that we deliver care that ultimately rests on three foundational principles, and these are core to our beliefs. Number one, we believe that emotional connections matter most. We're not just constructing a building here, we're building a connected community. Number two, that residents direct each moment. Nobody tells any of you when to get up in the morning or when to go to bed, so why would we do that for our residents in their own home? And number three is that home isn't just a place, it's a profound feeling.
Thank you so much, Minister Dix. I'm Pam Hassan. I work for CSEK News, Smithers Community Radio.
Hi.
Hi. And I wondered what leverage the NDP is willing to use to try to achieve your plan to build over 500,000 units of affordable housing according to your supply and confidence agreement with the federal Liberals.
With respect to what we're doing today, that I think this is meeting commitments. I talked at the beginning about what was spent in long-term care under the previous government, the previous 10 years, which was the BC Liberal governments now, BC United and the Conservative Party, depending on which members you're talking about. 17 million over 10 years, about 3 beds a year in an aging and growing population. It was a generational betrayal. Mm-hmm. And what we're doing here is building thousands of beds everywhere, but not just in Vancouver, not just in Nanaimo, not just in Surrey, not just in Abbotsford, but in Smithers and in Fort St. James and in Kitimat and in Quesnel today and in Prince George and new hospitals in Dawson Creek. This is, bar none, the most significant investment in northern BC
in healthcare in the history of the province. So this is, I don't know what the standard is for commitment, but this exceeds that. And it only happens, I just say to everybody, because I hear people talk about private healthcare. There is no market for private healthcare in rural and remote communities. What we're talking about is, in the case of the Conservative Party, an abandonment of public health care in the north. But we're not going to do that. We're investing here in the way that we absolutely should invest to ensure that we have the acute care and the long-term care that allows people to get care in the community that they live in. And we're going to continue to do it because there's more to do and there's more new work to do in community to do that. If you live in Prince Rupert, we're building an emergency department, but there's more to do. If you're in Hazleton, Mayor, there's more to do. And so there's more to do, but this is breathtaking in its scope for the North, what's being invested here. And I'm not sure what commitment we talked about at the federal level, but I know here at the provincial level, the NDP is delivering for the North on healthcare.
Okay. I did just have just one more, just about the construction date for the project being 2028,
yeah,
completion in 2030.
Yeah.
Are there grants or subsidies that are available to seniors who are currently paying much higher rent for where they live now?
Yeah, what we're doing, of course, people contribute in long-term care now. And because long-term care is the healthcare portion, which is essentially provided by the health authority. And then there's room and board. So what happens in long-term care is you pay 80% of your family income, essentially your income to pay for it. So that's how long-term care works. But obviously, these are not very significant facilities. They're at minimum in BC about $1 million a bed now. Mm-hmm. And in the communities that are farther flung from Metro Vancouver, in particular, they're more than that. So what we're doing with Providence Living, they've started in Prince George, they're finishing Prince George in 26, they start in Quesnel, they finish in Quesnel in 2028. All the planning is done concurrently, and they finish here in Smithers in 2030. And the money's in place, and the business plans are in place, and we're proceeding. And that's the layout. When you're an organization, they're not a small nonprofit, Tony. Not a small nonprofit, but even for a large nonprofit or for any organization, that is a massive thing. And we have a plan to get it delivered in all of those communities. It'll make a huge difference across the North. So that's the building plan.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to CICK News. If you have any hot tips or news stories you think we should cover, contact us at CICKnews@smithersradio.com or follow us on Facebook at CICK News. CICK News is made possible by the Government of Canada and the Community Radio Fund of Canada, the only organization mandated to financially supporting campus and community radio stations across Canada. You can also catch our fresh shows each week at theskeena.com or subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you find your podcasts. Thanks to our producer Pam Hassan and all of our roving reporters, I'm Dan Messick. Thanks for listening.